Hello and welcome to the StoryGrid podcast. This is a show dedicated to helping you become a better writer. I'm your host, Tim Grawl, and I am a writer and publisher at StoryGrid. Joining me shortly is Sean Coyne. He is the creator of StoryGrid, the author of the book StoryGrid, and an editor with over 25 years experience. In this episode, we keep diving into the StoryGrid Trinity. So this week, we're going to talk about the third level, which is beyond the surface. And I just want to remind you that we are hosting a StoryGrid Trinity seminar here in Nashville, Tennessee, and streaming online as well. You can see all of the information about that at storygrid.com/trinity. Also, Sean has put together just a short video walking you through everything that he's going to teach at the seminar and where this idea came from and the basis of it and why it's so important. It's a really cool little video. So you can see that at storygrid.com/trinity as well. Okay, let's jump into this final episode of the StoryGrid Trinity series on the podcast where we talk about beyond the surface. So I'm excited for you to listen in. So let's jump in and get started. So Sean, the last few weeks we've been looking at this StoryGrid Trinity and looking at the three different pieces of it: on the surface, above the surface, and beyond the surface. And I feel like they get, well, you've talked about how you have to have on the surface. And then once you have on the surface, you look at above the surface. And then now once you have above the surface, we're looking at beyond the surface. But I also feel like they get a little bit more hard to wrap your head around at each level, right? So on the surface is pretty straightforward. It's what's happening. What are the characters literally doing? How are they moving? Where are they going? What's happening to them? And then above the surface is that what is happening inside of their skulls, right? So the why of what they're doing, what they want, what they need, all of those things. What is the beyond the surface?
Well, the beyond the surface is sort of the monomythic construct that Carl Jung came up with that he called individuation. Okay, so the individuation is simply the means by which we transform ourselves into better agents on the planet. Now, it's based upon, in philosophy, it's called the nomological order. The words that philosophers use and scientists use can get super intimidating, but all the nomological order means is that there's a trinity, there's a trinity of the way we experience the world, okay? And that trinity is that we are agents, each subject on the planet, each Homo sapiens and other species too. COVID-19 is an agent, right? Mm-hmm. And each agent has agency that they enact in the universal arena. So beyond the surface stems from that trinity. Each one of us has agency that we enact in the global arena. So it's a feedback loop, right? So one of the examples I use at seminars is it's as if when I throw a boomerang, I expect it to come back as a boomerang, right? So I agentically throw something into the arena and it circles back and I'm expecting it to be a boomerang that comes back to me, right? That's called sort of being in tune with the arena. I make a prediction. If I throw the boomerang a certain way, it will circle back and I'll be able to catch it in my left hand. That's a predictive agent enacting agency in arena that they believe that they are attuned to. So here's the problem. Sometimes we throw boomerangs and we get a gorilla come back at us. A metaphorical gorilla, right? So what we predict will happen doesn't happen. And so what we can do is one of two things. We can say to ourselves, I need to find a new way of thinking about the way I throw boomerangs. Or I can say, oh, I'm just going to ignore that gorilla because it will make me have to change the way I'm behaving in this arena. And I don't want to change because it's working pretty well, right? So if I throw a boomerang 150 times and I only get one gorilla back, I'm not going to change my behavior, right? Because that's a pretty good percentage. This is beyond the surface stuff, right? And it's as true today as it was in the Bronze Age. So beyond the surface is those deep patterns of understanding reality that have to be aligned in a story so that it makes sense. So when Carl Jung was talking about individuation, and then Joseph Campbell started talking about the hero's journey, what they were talking about was a process by which we can get better at our boomerangs, right? So that we can attune ourselves to the natural reality of a thing that we don't know much about, but we can get a little bit better. We can transform our agency so that it's more attuned and adaptive to the environments that we find ourselves. So the beyond the surface stuff has traditionally been seen as the hero's journey. So there's all kinds of wonderful stuff that you can use to check to see if you're aligning with beyond the surface, right? And there are some great cheats, great feature lists, like you want to start your avatars in a world that they're very familiar with, right? And in that world, at the beginning of your story, you want an avatar to have a gorilla drop into their life, meaning they're throwing boomerangs and all of a sudden a big, big gorilla comes back from the boomerang instead of what they're expecting. And then in order to deal with that gorilla, they have to leave their familiar environment and go into a brand new environment to search for a solution to that gorilla problem. I'm speaking very metaphorically and abstractly, but this is generally beyond the surface, right? So they move from their familiar into the extraordinary world, and they discover that all of their boomerangs turn into gorillas. So it's like the percentages of boomerangs coming back are dwindling. So in the familiar world, they're shooting about 80%. Like, it's pretty good. But then when they go into the extraordinary world, 80% becomes 70, becomes 60, becomes 50. It gets progressively maladaptive. What they do, their motions in that world are not working to get them what they want, until you hit this crisis in the middle of the story. It's called the midpoint crisis. And it's when the avatar, your central protagonist avatar, discovers that everything that they're throwing doesn't make sense. None of the things that they thought were going to work for them, they no longer make sense. This is the individuation process. This is the hero's journey. And once they hit that crisis, they tumble down to the depths of themselves. They fall into chaos and they wonder, well, if I can't do anything on the earth that makes sense, that means that I don't make sense, which means that even my being on the planet doesn't make sense. And they reach the bottom of themselves, which I call the existential crisis. And that's when they wonder, what's the point of all this? This is ridiculous. And it's at this point that something either magical happens, they release their desire to have certainty about what they're supposed to do, and that release of that desire actually opens up a channel into another realm that we don't understand called the numinous. And they have an insight. It's kind of like when you don't know the answer to a problem, and all of a sudden you do.
Yeah.
It's exactly that. So when people say, oh, that numinous stuff is ridiculous, Sean, it doesn't make any sense. It's not the way the world is. Just think about when you solve a problem when you thought you would never solve it. And it's just kind of like, oh, of course, that's what I do. That's what I'm talking about. That's an insight. That's a revelation that comes from somewhere. I just call that place somewhere the numinous.
Yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, you introduced the three eyes, right? You had the eye of the author, the eye of the avatar, the eye of the audience. And you talked about the audience from the on the surface side of things. You talked about the avatar from above the surface. And so how do you equate the author and the beyond the surface together?
The author has to contend with beyond the surface. So the author needs to think about these things for themselves. And so this is where it gets extraordinarily revelatory. It's what Steve Pressfield would call the artist journey. This is when the author artist discovers something unique about themselves. It's like Jackson Brown says, the reason why I write songs is I want to learn to know what I think. And so that's what the author does. So the author is contending with beyond the surface. because I haven't really mentioned this, but there's a trinity of time signatures for each of these two. So the on the surface time is what is happening right now. What is actually in front of my eyes and my vision? What motion am I experiencing in the world? That's on the surface. Right. Above the surface is what am I experiencing right now? What does that have to do with everything I've experienced in my life so far? So that's the duration of your lifespan. And how, what is it going to mean for the future of my life? The finitude of my life. So on the surface is a point in time. It's a single event. It's a collapse of a moment in time. Above the surface is about the finitude of your own existence. How long is Tim Grawl going to be on the planet? The way I look at doing the podcast is like, I don't know how much more time I have. You know, I'm not trying to be morbid, but I have to think about, look, I've got a lot of crap in this head that I would like to translate to other people so that they can use it or not use it, but I need to get it out or I won't feel like I've done justice to the finitude of my life, right? Now, right. Oh my gosh, here comes beyond the surface. What's the time signature of beyond the surface? Oh my gosh, it's holy crap. Me, the finitude of my existence in the context of the infinitude of eternity. That's a big, big thing, right? So once you start thinking about that, then you can start thinking about, oh, well, let me think less about the finitude of Sean Coyne. Let me think about the finitude of the species Homo sapiens, right? Because we know that things get extinct all the time, right? There are beings on our earth that die off. They're no longer here, right? Part of thinking about beyond the surface is to think about what is the context of a single life in the frame of the species in the frame of eternity. Can a single life help the species increase its ability to survive, thrive, and derive meaning on this planet? Or can it decrease that? Like, let's say the Homo sapiens species has 300,000 years available to it. Let's say it's 2 million years. It doesn't matter. Let's say there's a probability, like the Roman Empire, it had a probability of surviving. It lasted a couple thousand years. It worked. We're in the United States. Who knows? Right? So right. Understanding time as much, much more large than the duration of your own life is extraordinarily important. So that's what beyond the surface is about. So it's literally thinking about what will help Homo sapiens survive, thrive, and derive meaning for the longest possible time. And so what you can do is it requires the individual life to level up their cognitive capability. That's one. And then also to link up with other people who are doing the same thing, to participate with other members of the species such that we get a better understanding of how to navigate this world before it blows up. So a story is about, it's deeply, deeply important because what it's telling people is you have to individuate and participate in increasing our ability to survive, thrive, and derive. Don't do it so that it decreases that ability. Do it to increase that ability. Do it for the species. Do it for your children. Do it for your great-grandchildren. And what you need to do is to break up unconscious crap from your lineage that is keeping you maladaptive to environmental change. I know this is super abstract, and I know I'm probably losing you, but it's about the infinitude.
Right. So when we talk about on the surface, it's the moment right now. When we talk about above the surface, it's basically my lifespan, right? What's happened to me?
What does your life mean?
Right. Okay. What does my life mean to who? To me? When we're above the surface.
What does your life mean to you, A, to your children and your loved ones?
Okay.
What does it mean to your tribal affiliations?
Mm-hmm.
You see how this is expanding like a tornado. So It's first party, second party, third party.
Okay, so in the beyond the surface is the global species. And you've been talking a lot about what it looks like in the future, right? So what does my life look like towards where we're going?
The great thing about telling a story is that you can rip yourself out of this equation, right?
Yeah.
So you can just separate yourself from all of this pain and you can say, what does my avatar's life mean?
Right. Well, I'm trying to wrap my head around. So how does this bring me back to things like, oh, my story needs a mentor?
Carl Jung did all this work for us, right? So he's like, well, okay, we all have to get smarter. Our cognitive capabilities have to get better so that we don't blow up the world. Okay, cool. How do we do that? And Jung was like, I wonder if there's some answers to this in mythopoetic stories from the past. So Carl Jung didn't want to solve the problem himself. He thought to himself, I bet other people have dealt with this problem before me. So why don't I take a look at all these other stories like the Bhagavad Gita and the Mahabharata and the blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I mean, like all of the Nordic myths. And so he looked at them and he's like, what do all these things have in common? And he's like, oh, there are these forces that enable, they enable people and they constrain people so that they can undergo the process of individuating, transforming themselves into more complex beings. What are those forces? Well, there's this force of mentorship, meaning that the mentor can impart some knowledge to someone who is lower on the developmental cognitive scale. And there are two kinds of mentors. There is the mentor that is luminary. They're doing it in order to bring in more light into the world. They want to enlighten. Okay, that's one kind of force of mentorship. And then there's another one. That's kind of like the necromancer. And the necromancer doesn't believe in enlightenment. They believe that this is all there is. So what they're doing is that they are a force of trying to capture the agency of the mentee so that they can control the mentee as just another foot soldier in their army. So Sauron in The Lord of the Rings, who doesn't even have a physicality, the Eye of Sauron, right?
Right.
The Eye of Sauron is a necromancer. The Eye of Sauron just is sucking, is a big vacuum of agency. And that eye wants to eat and devour the planet. And then there's Gandalf, right? And Gandalf wants to enlighten.
Right.
So Gandalf is a mentorship force that is trying to open up the enlightenment of the world and to get people to individuate, like Frodo, like Bilbo.
Okay.
So this is what Jung did, is he saw these patterns of intelligibility across multiple mythic structures in multiple cultures that has nothing to do with skin color or language or anything. They all share a mythopoetic tradition. And so these mythic forces of archetypes, they are present all the time. They are beyond the surface. They are forces of the mythopoetic phenomenology of our experience. We can't measure them. We can't take a Geiger counter and go, oh, there's mentorship over there. No, we don't even feel it. We know it to be true. Like, why did you ever call me? You're like, I need a mentor to teach me how to write. And I hope he's not a necromancer, right? You're like, there have been necromancers who have taken my money. I'm hoping this guy is not a necromancer. And I'm trying to be Gandalf, not Sauron.
Yeah. So when I'm thinking about this, so this is stuff that just exists. And what Jung did and what Joseph Campbell did is they basically are just doing pattern recognition. They're like, okay, so this is the stuff that seems to happen over and over and over. Because what we get in trouble as writers is hardening these things a little too much, where it's like, okay, if I just have a mentor, some allies, and some shadow agents, and I just have all these things, then my story is going to work. And it's like, well, it's not that solidified. It's more like this is what it feels like, and this is kind of how it tends to happen. Because when we were having the discussion around the book I'm working on now about what the mentor would be, we kind of start throwing out, you know, there's mentors that have been dogs, there's mentors that have been books, there's mentors that have been, of course, people, there's been child mentors, you know, like this mentor kind of force shows up lots and lots and lots of different ways. And it's mostly, it's what I always come back to is Anthony DeMello was this priest. He was a very Eastern Catholic priest, right? So he kind of did a good job of combining the Eastern and Western traditions. He gave this example one time that really has stuck with me, is he's like trying to describe God as this. He's like, imagine there's two blind men that have never seen before. And one of them comes up to you and they say, describe to me the color green. And so on that particular day, you say, well, you know, the color green is like the softest velvet you've ever touched. And it's like, okay, yeah, sure, that makes sense. And so that blind guy goes off, and a couple weeks later, another blind guy comes to you and you're on a different day. Maybe you guys are outside and he's like, describe to me the color green. And you're like, it's like standing on the top of a hill and the wind blowing in your face, right? And it's like, well, sure, that's just as true as the velvet thing, right? Because how do you describe a color to somebody that hasn't ever seen? And then, so then a couple weeks later, you're walking down the street and you see these two blind guys fighting and you go separate them. You're like, what the hell are you fighting about? And they're both fighting over what the color green is, because one believes it's velvet and one believes that it's like the wind on a cool day. And they're now fighting over the color green when they both don't actually even understand what it is. And like, that's what I always come back to is, so this mentor figure, he shows up as Gandalf here. He shows up as a kid here. He shows up as a book here. He shows up as Haymitch the drunk in Hunger Games. We're all talking about the same thing, which is this force that helps people move from point A to point B. But yet it can show up in any kind of different way, but it's still serving the same overall purpose. I don't know. Maybe I feel like I lost the thread at the end.
I used to think of them sort of as anthropomorphic kind of representations, meaning physical things that you put inside of your story. And now I think of them as the yang to the yin of gravitation in the physical world, right? So these are forces that have general flavors, and they are very, very morphy, really cool, like amazingly cool. So when you think about the mentor, you shouldn't think of any one thing. You could say, and this is where people kind of start to lose the thread, is that when you're crafting on the surface, you start to spin up this really incredible tapestry of motion. Mm-hmm. And so you have these really nice slides. I call them slides. So let's say there are 60 scenes in a novel, and you have like these 60 really cool slides, right? There are these motion capture things. Cool. And then you add the above the surface so that the justification systems of the avatars at play, it makes sense. And yeah. Then now when you're looking at beyond the surface, what you're going to discover is that a lot of it's already baked in there. Why? Because the story that you're going to be able to craft, really focusing on those two elements, will magically deliver these forces that I talk about beyond the surface. It will bake it in, but you still need to put on the beyond the surface glasses and look at each of those 60 frames and say, is it that clear? Because what you'll do is you'll discover, oh, this is sort of like a mentor like no mentor has ever been before. So the mentor in that movie Whiplash was the J.K. Simmons character, right? And boy, was he a very interesting mentor. He was luminary. He was necromancer. Which was he, right? And after the film is over, you're still wondering, what was he serving? Was he destroying that kid, or was he enlightening that kid? And I come down on extraordinarily painful enlightenment, individuation at a level that will almost kill you. It almost killed that kid. And that guy wouldn't let him get away without going all the way to the bottom. And that climactic scene at the end of Whiplash, you see J.K. Simmons when he clues into the fact that kid is creating music that has never been created before, and he gets with the program. He serves that drummer, and he changes the time signature, and he's like, now I serve that kid. That kid is my mentor now. So you see the way you can play with the force of mentorship. It shapeshifts. It does all kinds of weird stuff. But you can't really be able to take that level of analysis to your story until you've done on the surface, above the surface. And now you can say, ooh, now I get to look at the real beyond the surface forces that are going to make people have a catharsis at the end of the experience of seeing or reading my story. So it's really the super duper portal into the infinite eternal. So it's like, when you get here, now you're really playing some serious cricket. You know, you're at the top of the pyramid. You're playing in the realm of Jane Austen. Jane Austen did this. She pulled off beyond the surface. We're still talking about Jane. My children's children, hopefully, will still be talking about her. Do you get it? I mean, it's slippery. The higher up the pyramid, the more slippery it is, right?
Right.
But geez, knowing about it is super important. I mean, I did what, a 60-hour lecture on the Heroic Journey 2.0, which really gets into this stuff at a level right. that is very, very high resolution. So this is the eye. This is the last eye. And it's the eye of Sauron and the eye of Gandalf. And it's the eye of Sauron and the eye of Gandalf in you, because it's the eye yeah. of the author.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the StoryGrid podcast. Again, if you want to join us for the StoryGrid Trinity Conference here in Nashville and streaming online, you can see all of the information for that at storygrid.com/trinity. For everything else StoryGrid related, check out storygrid.com. Make sure you pick up a copy of the book and sign up for the newsletter so you don't miss anything happening in the StoryGrid universe. Also, make sure you go to storygrid.com/books to see all of the titles we have released through StoryGrid Publishing. If you'd like to check out the show notes for this episode or any past episodes, all of that can be found at storygrid.com/podcast. If you would like to submit a question for Sean to answer on a future episode, you can go to storygrid.com/podcast as well. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can find us on Twitter at StoryGrid. And lastly, if you'd like to support the show, you can do that by telling another author about the show and by visiting us on Apple Podcasts and leaving a rating and review. Thanks for subscribing and being a part of our work here at StoryGrid. We will see you next week.